All right, so today, July the 2nd, and we're looking at July 4th weekend, really, and so we have some extra things going on, but today I wanted to do something more patriotic in substance and apply that to our lives personally. In 1956, on July 30th, 1956, the president approved a joint resolution of the 84th Congress declaring, "In God We Trust," to be the nation's motto. Isn't that cool? In time of a lot of turmoil, because turmoil was on its way, you remember the 60s and the things that happened there, this was right before that. What a declaration to make for our country. Well, it didn't begin there. That started really way back 100 years previous in 1861, where it started with a pastor. See, pastors can do great things for the nation, I'm just saying. And so it started with a pastor over in Philadelphia, in Delaware County, Reverend Watkinson. And you can find this if you're fact-checking me. You can go to the United States Department of Treasury. It's right there, and you can read along with me as we go. But he wrote this letter to the person in charge of the finances, the secretary there. And so he says, "Dear sir, we are about to submit your annual report to the Congress respecting the affairs of the national finances. One fact touching our currency has hitherto been seriously overlooked. I mean the recognition of the Almighty God in some form on our coins. You are probably a Christian. What if our republic were not shattered beyond reconstruction?" Now, you remember what year this is. This is 1861. We'll get to the history of this in a second. He says, "Would not the antiquaries of succeeding centuries rightly reason from our past that we were a heathen nation? What I propose, is that instead of the goddess of liberty, we shall have next inside the 13 stars a ring inscribed with the words perpetual union, within the ring the all-seeing eye crowned with a halo." And some people attribute the all-seeing eye to Masons, and this is that got included a little bit before that, but that's another history lesson. It says, "Crowned with a halo, beneath the eye the American flag, bearing in its field stars equal to the number of states united. It in the folds of the bars, the words God, Liberty, Law." This coin would make a beautiful coin. What a good, he's really selling this. "To which no possible citizen could object." I mean, who could object this? "This would relieve us from the ignominy of heathenism. This would place us openly under the divine protection we have personally claimed. From my hearth I have felt our national shame in disowning God as not the least of our present national disasters. To you first I address a subject that must be agitated." As a result, the Secretary Chase, he then instructed the Director of Mint at Philadelphia to work on this. And it took 4 years then for them to go back and forth and do some different things. And finally, the approval, where it went from our God and our country, then it got to finally, "In God We Trust." And so April 22nd, 1864, they passed an act to put this on the 1 cent coin. At first, it really appeared earlier than that on the 2 cent coin, which we no longer have. So then it continued to be on different bills and stuff like that as it went. And it took until the mid-1900s till it was on everything. And so that's where "In God We Trust" came from, and kind of the history behind it. But what was happening at that time in our nation? Do you remember? Yes, Civil War. Those that are historians, and I'm not a historian with American history. I like biblical and church history much more. But in American history, if you're a historian, you'll be able to chime in a little bit more or know more about this. But in 1860, who was the president that was elected? Abraham Lincoln, okay? So Abraham Lincoln was elected 1860. Do you realize that he was voted in with just 40% of the popular vote? They had three running, but 40%. We look today and we're like, well, that'd be horrible. In the months that followed, in the weeks really that followed, seven states seceded from the Union, and in his first year, the Civil War began. He was not a popular president as he went into this. He was really not even looked at as someone that would make it to be the president. The amount of failures he had in his life prior to was fascinating. You could do a whole study on Abraham Lincoln and see that. Many of you already know that. But in our country, these were times of great fear. In our country, it was a time of constant battle, and it was really in freedom for slavery. To abolish slavery was the ultimate goal that he had been looking for in all of the United States, and there's reasons for everything that was going on in that time. And it's still hard for me, and I know I'm for many of you, you'd agree, it's hard for me to imagine slavery where you're putting human beings into a position of slavery. It's still hard for me to wrap my mind around how you can get to that point and be okay with it. But that's history. So they're living in times of great fear. Some thought our country would not survive this war. Over 620,000 people died in the war, and many of those, it was because they just had a really bad health system as well, and that happened as well, and we talked about that even a few weeks ago. In the end, the 13th Amendment was passed, and slavery was finally abolished. Today, where are we at? Are we living in a place that does not have fear? Today, we're living in a time where fear is at a high level. Do you remember a year ago, all the things that were happening a year ago? A year ago was a really hard time in our country, where the racial profiling that's been happening and the police shootings that was happening and all the things, it just came to a kind of a boiling point a year ago at this time. What a challenging time for our nation. And certainly there's, you know, a lot of tension back and forth with that. And what do we do and how do we go? Is it the police officer's fault? Is it race fault? And it went back and forth. And I'll summarize all of that and simply say, no matter where you go, there's challenging people that can't see things correctly, no matter where you go. And I'm not going to take the actions of a couple of people and put that on everyone. We have great police officers around us. In our church, we have great police officers, and we have great people of all kinds of different races, and the actions of a few should not be pushed on everyone. And so I look today and I say, man, where are we? Because truthfully, racial and religious tensions are very high still. And it's because of the actions of a few in some cases. We've watched airplanes fly into buildings. We've watched not one, but several school shootings. We turn on the news and we see someone goes into a school, an elementary school, and kills many children. We've watched church shootings go into a prayer meeting and murder. We've watched protests of all kinds of different things, and I think protests are maybe higher. I couldn't give you the exact because I didn't really do the research on it, but they're at a higher level, it seems like, today than I've ever seen in my lifetime, maybe higher than the 60s. I don't know. But there's protests all over the place. And as I mentioned, the racial profiling, the police brutality, police killings, and you just go on and on. There's many terrifying things that are happening in our country. And I'm only touching on a few that we can relate to easily, and there's so many more, aren't there? To go into some other things, the disrespectful attitudes in our culture. People are so disrespectful of each other. Not simply disrespectful, but hurtful. You see it on television. It's normal to hurt each other. It's normal to kind of lay each other out and say what you want because you feel like it. And you go further and you get into schools or homes and workplace, it's simply common to be disrespectful, hurtful, and self-gratifying. Think about this. The amount of dysfunction that's happening in our country, in our culture, in our community is just incredible. And dysfunction is normal. Hurt is normal. It's expected. A few years ago, the rise of harassment, intimidation, and bullying in schools, the kind of action against that was huge and should be because of the things that were happening on a personal level. And it hasn't totally gone away, we'll say for sure. And if you have any kids in school, you understand most kids go through some real serious challenges. And as you bring into it social media, the Facebook, the Instagram, the Twitter, and things like that, some of those, I think Twitter especially, is simply a rant, you know, where it's getting on a high horse and sometimes it's almost, you could say, abusive toward people. I've met with many people, not a few, many people that are affected in such extreme ways from some of the things that happen on Twitter, on Facebook, on social media in general, or happened at school or the workplace, where the amount of pressure, the amount of hurt that they are faced with causes such fear and anxiety to be able to get up. I met with some that just to get up, they're throwing up two or three times in the morning before they get on the school bus to go to school, or they're going into work and they're seeing a counselor just to be able to get to work because of the pressure, the fear, the anxiety that's so high. And it comes back to some of these things. You know, just talking about this can give you an anxiety attack, can't it? One of the debates that we're facing today in political arenas is, what do we do with the refugees, right? What do we do with people that are refugees from another country, and they're probably another religion, and they're another color, and what do we do in America? And there's some that say, send them away, get rid of them, and some say, no, we can't do that, and we got to have a place for them. And look, I don't really want to get into the politics aspect of it. From my perspective as a church, I look and say, they're just bringing the mission field to here, and so it kind of makes sense for us to minister to people that are going through a horrendous time. And I look at it outside of politics and say, if people are leaving the place that they grew up because they aren't safe and relocating to a place they have no idea about, listen, let me kind of pull this back. Y'all sit in about the same seat because you have a comfort zone of, this is where I sit. And sometimes you change around and everything and it messes me totally up, and I understand. But we have our comfort zone of, this is where I want to be, and I drive this way to work, and I sit in this pew at church, and I go to this restaurant all the time because it's my favorite, and I like to be here at this time, and we have our comfort zones, our routines. Listen, what does it take to change some of your routines, some of your comfort zones? It's like, whoa, my day's totally messed up because somebody sat in my seat at church, right? Or something else that happens. You're like, oh, mind-blowing. Think about this. The people that are relocating their entire lives, leaving everything they've worked for, in order to go to some other country or place so that they can feel safe. How hard is it on them? How much stress, how much fear, how much anxiety are they going through? It'd be huge, wouldn't it? Could you put yourself there for a second? I'm not attaching anything to that. I'm just saying, just feel where they are. As Jesus felt compassion for people, I'm asking us to feel compassion. So many people feel like a refugee. You know that? So many people feel uncomfortable, awkward, stressed out, frustrated, having a hard time with the place that they're at right now. Don't know what to do with it. It's in our country. It's in homes. It's in our community. We're afraid of getting shot at times. We're afraid of what this person's going to do. We're afraid of road rage. We're afraid. There's so much going on. So what do we do about it? That's the question. So I'm tackling a huge subject. Would you agree? It's not too big for God, though. It's cool stuff. Fear starts with a feeling. Fear starts with a feeling. Fear is a good thing. If I walk out to Evesham Avenue, and I walk out into the middle of the street, should I feel fear? How many would agree? Fear is a good thing. It is a God-given gift for you to feel afraid at that moment. If I see my son or daughter going out into Evesham, should my fear be higher? Right? Fear is a good thing. If I see them even going close, my heart like, and I'm like running to take care of them, pull them away and such. We were up at the Poconos last week, and we were on a street in Jim Thorpe that had, it's a very narrow street, had a sidewalk and buildings right on the sidewalk, and then a small street, and then cars. And we're there, and we're just kind of walking, and we stopped, and we're looking across at the other way, and as we were, a car comes down, and it's going a little faster than I felt comfortable with, and my son Ethan is on the curb, and I'm 5 feet away from him, over here, and there's a couple other family members that are there, and friends, and they're there next to him. And just as the car was about to go across, he goes to move out in the street. My heart sinks as I know I'm, like in a split second, I'm thinking, I can't get there fast enough. And just as it happened, Connor and one of the friends both grabbed him and pulled him back. So in my heart, I didn't say this to Mel, it's the first time she's hearing about this, but I'm sorry. She's going to have anxiety the rest of the time. What did you tell me? But as I was sitting there, man, my heart was like, boom, 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 right? And the anxiety of fear, why? Because it's real. Fear's okay. It's real. It's an emotion. So what do you do with it? 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7 says this. And I'll have some of these on the screen. In your pew, you have Bibles there. If you don't have a Bible, we like to go to the Bible because it's our source book for everything. Paul says this to Timothy. He says, for God gave us a spirit, not of fear, but of power and love and self-control. Now he's not saying you should never feel fearful. That's wrong. That's against what's going on here. You should feel a sense of fear when things are going in a direction that you're like, oh, this is hard. This is challenging. I feel fearful in this moment. My family's falling apart. My finances, I don't know if I can pay this. I have this crisis going on. You'll feel fearful. Yes, that's a good thing. However, he says God didn't give us a spirit, not a fear. It's that you don't have within you what is constantly happening is fear. We should not be living a life of constant fear. There's the difference from I feel fearful into the other side of it is I'm dominated by fear. That's the distinction here. God did not give us the spirit that what's constantly flowing inside of it, the domination of our heart, is constant fear. That's not where God wants us to be. Instead, what he did is he says, I give you this, the gift of power, love, and self-control. Power, love, and self-control. I'm giving you this, that you should live a life that's powerful. You should live a life of love. Love is what? Love is me looking out for other people. And self-control is, hey, as I'm going through this challenging time, I know how to keep myself in check. That's what God is leading us into. The power, love, and self-control. The power is not like a superhero that I can fly now, or I can see through things, or I can run faster. That's not what it is. It's a power that God gives us inside to be able to be who we're called to be with people around us and to live a life that's pleasing to Him. It's a power through the Holy Spirit. So I want to show you an individual that faced a lot of fearful times. And you'll find this in 1 Samuel 21. The guy that I want to talk about is David. David, you may know a little bit about or may know a lot about. David was this guy that was born to Jesse and in this little town. And Samuel the prophet, he was an Israelite Jewish person. And in that, the way things kind of worked out is Samuel would come and he would ordain, in a sense, the next king that would be going into place. The king that was on the throne was King Saul. So Samuel comes and he goes, hey, David, you're going to be the next king. He anoints him, and he's just a young person at that time. Well, then you go a little bit further in his life, and David's shepherding his father's flocks, and so he that's where he's at. He's not going to king school or anything like that. He's going to he's simply just being a shepherd out in the field. And while he's doing that, his brothers are in the military defending their country against the Philistines and others that they're fighting against. So they're in the military. He's a shepherd on the corner. And so one day, his father says to him, David, I want you to go and take some food to your brothers, see how things are going. So he does. He goes in. And you remember this? So he goes in and he sees his brothers and what's going on there. And he hears this guy who's making a mockery of the people there. And the guy is this huge guy. He's 9 foot something, whatever. And you remember his name? It was Goliath. Very good. Okay, so Goliath is there. And he hears him. He's cursing at God. He's basically saying, you know, Israel, you're nothing. And my God's greater. And I'm so great. And he says, whoever you could send to fight against me, whoever wins, that's who wins the day and stuff like that. And so this big kind of fight out in the playground or whatever. And it's way bigger than that. And the king, who's the tallest guy in the room, he's just looking and saying, is there anybody that can take care of this guy? And he's just a chicken. Like, he's just like this baby, and somebody else has got to do it, not the king for sure. And David, this runt of a kid, comes in, and he sees what's going on, and he goes, hey, I got it. King, just, like, I got this. And so he does, he goes in, and there's a whole story about this where David goes in, and the king says, well, use my armor, and you take armor of this guy to this guy, and it doesn't work out so well. And so he says, I can't do that, so I'm going to use the thing that I know I can use, because I killed a bear once, a lion. I'm good with this. I can handle this giant. He's nothing compared to a bear and a lion, could you imagine? And he goes out, and he doesn't have the armor. He just has a slingshot with 5 stones. There's a lot of reason as to why he has 5 stones, but so he goes out, and then the trash talk on the field where Goliath's like, yo, man, you come at me with this puny little guy. He's nothing. I'm going to rip him to shreds, and you know, the birds are going to eat him and everything. And David's like, you kidding me? Today, my God is going to have victory, and you're going to be done. Whew. You're talking mighty big for this small pants that you got on, right? And so they go at it, so as Goliath is running, David's running to him with a slingshot, and he lets it go, and what happens? He misses. No, he doesn't miss. Come on. You learned this, right? Right, he throws and it hits him, and wham, hits him right here and knocks him down. He falls, and he's on the ground. He's about to, and he takes his sword and cuts his head off. He picks up the head. Could you imagine this? We never did this in Sunday school this way. The flannel graph would have been awesome. Like, pick up the head. Oh, man. Kids have nightmares for months. And it didn't work out. But I'm just saying, the kids are downstairs. We're taking it and doing real. So he does that, and he picks up the head, and he's dragging it to battle. And you see him, actually, chapters later, he's still dragging the head with him. And that's his trophy. Kind of an odd trophy, but he did. And he's got the knife and the sword and everything. So it was a great victory. And so after that, you know, he comes back into town, and this is after the battles and stuff. He comes back into town, and here's what everybody says. Everybody's like, wow, this is awesome. The king has killed his thousands, but David's killed his 10,000s. And how does the king feel at that moment? Have you ever been belittled in a way that you were like, wow, that didn't feel so nice? How's the king respond? It says he envied him. He was angry. He was jealous. He was, infuriated him. But he was there. And he had to fulfill the promises, and so he sort of kind of did. And so David goes through his thing, and King Saul is just so angry and jealous. It gets to a point where he's in the palace, and the king throws his spear at him. Okay, if you're David, fear or no fear? Fear? He's throwing his spear at him. Couple times. And finally, his best friend Jonathan, who's the king's son, who should have been the next one on the throne, but David knew and Jonathan knew he was going to be taking the throne, and so there's some fascinating things going on there. But they're best friends, and Jonathan says, you know, they make this whole deal where he shoots the arrow and says, yeah, my dad really is mad. He really does want to kill you. Interesting. You're not just imagining this fear in your mind. It really is going on. So in fear, sometimes you confirm, is this something I should be afraid of? Yeah, the car does go fast enough to run you over. You should not be in the street, okay? And so that's what he does. So in 1 Samuel chapter 21, if you haven't gotten there yet in your Bibles, we're going to read this passage together and be able to dive into where he's at. So David is now on the run. He's running from the king. He's a refugee, if you will. He's in a place where certainly we would all be experiencing a bit of fear. By the way, Where's his family? Not around. Friends? Not around. He's alone. He's alone. So in 1 Samuel chapter 21, verse 10, it says, "And David rose and fled that day from Saul and went to Achish, the king of Gath." So he goes to a different country, into this place. "And the servants of Achish said to him, 'Is not this David the king of the land?'" Well, wait a second. We know this guy. He's the king over there. I mean, not yet the king, but he's going to be. And so he's that guy. And you remember, they sang these songs to each other in these dances. Saul struck down his thousands and David's 10,000s. Maybe has a cute little rhyme that goes with it and the song. And they're like, "Hey, remember that?" And that's the guy. Verse 12. "And David took these words to heart and was much afraid of Achish, the king of Gath." So David's takes and he sees what they're now saying. They're saying this is a problem. David's inside. He's like the Trojan horse. He's there with us. And I think this is a trap. We need to run away from this trap. There's a problem. And we need to get rid of this guy or kill him or do something with him. So David is now understanding this is not a friendly area for me to be in. So he's much afraid. Do you see that? He's actually expressing his emotions. When you're afraid, you're struggling with fear, speak it. "I am afraid because." Should David feel fear at this moment? Yes or no? How many say yes? How many say no? How many say I'm not raising my hand today? Okay, good. So it's a yes. Okay, so he should feel fear because he's in a place that is he thought would be okay and now it's not okay. So he's much afraid. So here's what he does. I love this. "So he changed his behavior before them and pretended to be insane in their hands and made marks on the doors of the gate and let his spittle run down his beard." Could you imagine this? Like, he's acting like a crazy fool. He's got slobber coming out on his beard and he's just clawing away and just looking goofy and weird and he needs to get back on his medication kind of person, right? "Then Achish said to the servants, 'Behold, you see the man is mad. Like, you brought me the king. That guy there, wrong person. He must be, everybody's got a twin, right? He must be the evil or the weird twin.'" Even yesterday, do you know somebody said that they called me Matt? It's my twin. I don't know. Matt and I are always getting confused, and that's just a funny thing. Anyway, so he says, "See this man's man. Why then have you brought him to me? Do I lack madmen that you have brought this fellow to behave as a madman in my presence? Shall this fellow come into my house?" So he gets rid of him. And in chapter 22, it says, "David departed from there and escaped to the cave of Adullam." Now stop there. David does something absolutely creative and escapes the pressure that he's in. It's fascinating. Go to Psalm 34 now with me. If you don't want to turn there, I have it on the PowerPoint. But keep your finger in 1 Samuel 22 because we're going to come back to this. Psalm 34 is fascinating because David, in this time, we don't always have a psalm, a poem or whatever that he's written about the event that he's going through, but we do for this one. While he's going through this time of great fear, the king has chased him out. He's put him in a position where he's alone. He's by himself. Nobody likes him. Everyone's abandoned him. He doesn't know what his dad thinks. Listen, if the king is chasing you, you're the one that's the refugee. What do you think in your mind? How do you picture everyone else? Like the friend status on Facebook, you got zero now, it feels like. Nobody wants to Twitter nice things about you. They're like, "Hey, did you hear about David? The king wants him dead. He must have said something really awful." Have you had that? I mean, teens in school, do you understand what this is? When somebody says they start a bad rumor about you, they're like, "Hey, do you remember someone? Do you see what they did? Do you see what they're wearing? They got a blue shirt. You don't wear blue on Tuesdays. You only wear green on Tuesdays." I don't know what it is, but you know, and you have this kind of crazy thing that's going on. And in your mind, you're like, "Oh, my day started out great. I had a great breakfast. I actually had breakfast this morning. I came into school and everything was good until second period when they said that. And now I'm like, my whole life is just a wreck. And nobody, I'm walking down the hallway and I feel like I have this bubble and no one's looking at me. No one's talking to me. And I feel alone and I feel like everybody hates me. And I didn't do anything wrong. Now multiply that times 100 because David is not only feeling that, he has a king chasing him that wants him dead. And he didn't do anything but help the king win. Whew. That's a lot of anxiety, would you agree? If he stopped and saw a psychologist on the psychologist would be like, yeah, I'll give you lots of medication, but it will make you nap for a while, okay? And so you won't be able to defend yourself, so just keep running, buddy. And so that's where David finds himself. And Psalm 34 is fascinating because here's what he says in Psalm 34, the very first part. He says of David, when he changed his behavior before Abimelech so that he drove him out and he went away. Isn't this cool? It's like, wait, I want to know the inside thought of this guy that Jesus calls a man of God during the time that would be absolutely fearful, absolutely alone, a hard time all the way through. I want to know what he's thinking. So he shares. Verse 1, I will bless the Lord at all times. What? That's not the answer. That's a Sunday school answer. I want the real deal. I will bless the Lord at all times. Do you understand? How do you bless God when your life just fell apart? It was good a few months ago when he's hanging out with daddy, killed a bear, killed a lion, and the things are going great. Goes in, he kills this giant, and now all of a sudden, all these victories mean absolutely nothing because he's running for his life. I'm going to bless God at all times. His praise shall continually, always be in my mouth. He just feels like, I feel like something's missing. He says, my soul makes its boast in the Lord. Let the humble hear and be glad. So I think that while he's in the cave, he's writing these things down as he's run from the king and he's in the hiding place and he's in his own time. He's just writing these things down as I see it. God, you're awesome. My soul makes its boast in the Lord. Let the humble hear and be glad. Oh, magnify the Lord with me and let us exalt his name together. I sought the Lord and he heard me and delivered me from all my fears. Those who look to him are radiant and their faces shall never be ashamed. Isn't this awesome? Makes for a great song at church. But when you had a flat tire and your car then broke down a mile later and then somebody ran into it and then your wife left you and your dog left you and, oh, that's a country song. But when things aren't going so well and things are going awful, you're like, man, I don't know, but here's what he's saying. I sought the Lord. He answered me. He was there for me and he delivered me from all my what? My fears. While my fears were at a high level, God said, I got this. I am God. While you're not sure that you can pay the bills tomorrow, I am God. While you're not sure if that person still likes you or whether you're on the good crowd or not, I am God. While you're not sure about tomorrow and what is going to happen even today, I am God. I've got it. While you're concerned about the things in our nation, while you're concerned about the things in our communities, while you're I am God. He answered me and delivered me from all my fears. Those who look to him are radiant and their faces shall never be ashamed. There's people that I've seen like this that they go through horrendous times and I'm like, how in the world did you figure out how to smile? How in the world is your face radiant? While tears are streaming down their face, I see a resolve in them where they say, but God's got me. Go down further. He says, this poor man cried. Emotion, right? The feeling of fear, the feeling of anxiety, it's all there. It's okay to cry. Even David, even a man, cried. This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him and saved him out of all his troubles. And then he says this, and this is fascinating. He says, the angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him and delivers them. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the one who takes refuge in him. David had to think, I'm not that good of an actor. Like, how did I come up with that? Spittle coming down my beard and all this. Like, that was just a, I don't even know. I'm just wigging out here, and I'm just going to act like a fool just to see what happens, right? And he bought it. How? The angel of the Lord encamps round about him. As God is there, God is saying, I got you. I'm going to take care of this. Blessed is the one that takes refuge in him. Does that mean that every time we're in a stressful situation that you pray to God and it's just going to turn out perfect and all of a sudden the abusive person that's in front of you stops abusing you? The person that's being just hurtful and disrespectful on Twitter, on Facebook, or whatever is going to stop and, oh, I apologize for that. I didn't mean to say that. No, I said that wrong or I made that up. Is that what that means? No. No. What it is that God works in our mind and heart to give us the strength to get through. That our perspective no longer becomes the circumstance that we're living in, but our perspective becomes God's got it. And God's got a future in what he's doing in this. It's a different perspective altogether. And so while I go through pain, because he's not done being in pain, is he? The king didn't say, I quit. If you follow this through, this is years of the king actually pursuing and wanting to kill him. And David had the opportunity to kill the king, and David doesn't do it. But this is years of fear. It's not over yet. He's hiding in a cave while he's writing this. He's saying, God, you are my refuge. I'm the refugee. You're my refuge. And you've got this, God, and you're going to work this out. And I would just encourage you, for sake of time, I'm not going to do the rest of the chapter, but the rest of today, you can take your Bible and you can read the rest of Psalm 34. It's awesome. Blessed is the one who takes his refuge in him. So which would you say David is describing for us? Is the glass half empty or half full? Okay, if it's half empty, what would you be saying? Woe is me. Go ahead. My life is over. Nobody likes me. I don't even think my dad wants to be around me anymore. My brothers, they're certainly done with me. Right? Could you put yourself there? Wouldn't you say some of these things? And so here's a person that's in it. That's now, the glass is half full. Actually, I don't even think he would give him that much. I would say the glass is full. Not halfway. Glass is full is, I made it away from the king. The glass is all the way 100% full is, blessed is one who takes his refuge in him. Oh, taste and see. Man, I'll tell you what, I drank that glass. It was so awesome because God took care of me in it. My glass is filled up, it's overwhelmingly full, and God's got this. He's got a plan for what's going on. It's okay. That's where I see David. Go back to 1 Samuel 22 now. Your finger still in there? 1 Samuel 22. The next part. Here's where David's at. So in chapter 22, verse 1, David departed from there and he escaped to the cave of Adullam. And when his brothers and all his father's house heard it, how they heard it, I don't know. But here's what's fascinating. They heard it, they went down there to him. And everyone who was in distress, everyone who was in debt, and everyone who was bitter in soul, they gathered to him. And look what happened. He became commander over them. Instead of going with an accusation, they came to him and they said, help us. Be in charge. His family, his brother's family comes to him and says, David, we need some help here. It says, and there were with him about 400 men. And there's others as well, obviously. So it says, and David went from there to Mizpah, to Moab, and he said to the king of Moab, please let my father and my mother stay with you till I know what God will do for me. Isn't that fascinating? It's not what I can do. It's just, could you take care of my family, my dad, my mom, take care of them until I know what God's plan is. God's got this. Blessed is the man that trusts in God. You remember? He says, and he left them with the king of Moab, and they stayed with him all the time that David was in the stronghold. Then the prophet Gad said to David, "Do not remain in the stronghold. Depart and go into the land of Judah." So David departed and went into the forest of Hereth. So David continues to move on and go to the next step. I love this picture because what I see is a man that's all alone, a man that's just doesn't have anybody. He's just talking to God and saying, "God, I trust you. You've got this. You know what you're doing. So God, whatever the next step is, that's fine. So I'll trust you." And then all of a sudden, what shows up at the cave? Knock, knock. "Yo, David, you in there?" And then 400 and so people come to where he's at, and they're hanging out together. And they didn't say, "David, what'd you say to the king? Like, I heard this crazy rumor about you, and did you say this? And I saw in the newspapers, and I saw in what?" It wasn't that at all. It was, "David, we're so glad we're here. We're oppressed as well. David, be our commander. Be in charge. What do you think we should be doing now?" is what he says. See, what I love about this is it gives me a picture of how to deal with fear. When I'm in fear, do you know what I want? I want somebody to take care of it. Right? As a child, this is something very normal for a child. If a child's in fear, they're saying, "Somebody help me, somebody do something, I'm in fear." David's the one that's in the most fear. His life is being chased. And while he's there, what happens to him is the opposite, where they're looking at him and saying, "I know you're having a bad day. I know you have every reason to say, this is enough, I can't take it anymore. But David, we're putting you in the position of responsibility over top of us. You're our commander. We elect you the one in charge." So here's what I get. I see him as a rock because he depended on God. In God we trust, right? Three steps, and I'll close. I get this from this man of God. You can write this down on your notes and take it with you. You can make it a tweetable moment if you will, but I'm going to make it into one phrase. Fear is a feeling, so speak the truth by saying this: "I feel fearful because blank. I'm afraid because blank." Anxiety builds and fear takes over when we can't recognize the truth. And when fear dominates our life, when we allow our mind to have all these things spinning, and I fear, and it gets going, and it really gets on a roll where the fears just keep on going and going and going. You've never been there, have you? We all have, right? When it dominates like that, it's like, no, you have to stop it before that. When the fear begins is, "I feel fearful because I'm standing in the road." Okay, you need to do something, right? "I feel fearful because this happened to me." Yes. "I feel fearful because of where our country is at. I feel fearful because of how this person is being. I feel fearful." Yes, I see that. That's a real fear that can be there. That's step one. Call it out. Just speak it out. This is where I'm at. I'm dealing with my feelings. This is real. Step two is to trust God. "I'm afraid, but I trust God. I'm afraid of, but I trust God. Blessed is the one who puts his faith in God, who says, 'God, you've got this. You're with me.'" I love in Psalm 34, he says there, "God is with me. He's right there around me. I call out to him. He hears me. He's listening to me." You get a real relationship that's going on. And then it says in verse 7, "He puts angels around me." So God's there. God's got it. And it's simply in his time as to how and when he's going to deliver us and where. "I'm afraid, but I trust God. So get moving." So get moving. Here's the thing that we often forget or don't recognize. It's easy to say, "I trust God." That's the churchy answer, right? "I'm just trusting God in it, brother. He's going to get me through." Okay, what's that mean? So trust God looks like God's bigger than this, and so the next thing is, what do you want me to do, God? Where am I going next? What is the next step in my life? So you begin to move forward. You get moving. It's God, as you're moving me in this direction, I'll follow you. Remember 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7? Do you remember what he says? I didn't give you the spirit of fear, but I gave you this. I gave you the spirit of power and love, right? And so power is, here's what he's doing in me. And the next part is, I'm giving you a spirit of love. So this is what you're doing with people around you. You're serving people. You're caring for people. And self-control, that I'm not allowing this, what's happened to me in the circumstances, to get the best of me as I'm dealing with life going forward. And so then as I'm walking forward, it's, I don't have a reason to fear because God's got this. I still feel fearful. It's still present in me. The feeling's still there. But here's what I'm going to do. God, by your power, not the spirit of this fear, by your power, I'm walking forward and I'm going to love, I'm going to serve the people around me in self-control, the control that you want me to have in this. So what that looks like then is that he may be calling us to go to a place of refuge at times where he says, okay, it's time to get moving. You shouldn't be in this place. You shouldn't be in the middle of Evesham. You shouldn't be in this place of harm. You need to move away from this group of friends that continues to hurt you and do things like this, or this person or this family member or whatever. You need to move away from that because this is a place that isn't healthy for you. It's not where God wants you to be. You need to move to a place where God's going to protect you in these kinds of ways. It might be that you're on the opposite, where you are the refuge for the refugee, where you're saying, I've been there, I know how to work through this with you, I'm going to be there, I'm going to put my arms around you because God's leading me to do that because I've experienced it in the past. Sometimes you're the refuge for the refugee. So how do you deal with fear when it comes into your life? Very simple. When you feel fearful, trust God and get moving. When you feel fearful, trust God and get moving. I know that's so simple. I see David doing it. I see Elijah. I see Paul and several other people in the Bible. I had a hard time figuring out which text I want to preach on today because I see it in many different places. It's the same pattern. Yep, I feel afraid. Yep, I trust God. Okay, God, it's time to get moving. Tell me where to go. I'm going to get moving. I'm not going to sit here in my chair. I'm not going to curl up and just sit here and let this get the best of me. I'm going to get moving. And sometimes that means I'm going to clean my room. I'm going to do the dishes, or I'm going to go mow the grass, or I'm going to make some phone calls, or I'm just going to get busy doing something, doing anything, instead of sitting there and letting the fear dominate my life. Because God didn't give me a spirit of fear. God gave me spirit, the power, the love, and the self-control so that he can receive the glory. So say it with me. When I feel fearful, trust in God and get moving. Let's pray. Lord, thank you so much that you are God, that we can say, as we've experienced your love and your care through our challenging times, Lord, blessed. We are blessed as we have put our trust in you. Lord, be with those that are going through some times of anxiety right now. Lord, give strength, give courage. Lord, may we be a refuge to refugees here in this place. Lord, I pray that you just care for each one of us and the steps we're taking in our lives. And we'll give you the praise for it. It's through Jesus I pray. Amen.